We're doing our class in Navi. We had started learning the story of Samson. We said Samson was wide, like from this room all the way to the street out there. He had very broad shoulders. We discussed Samson being crippled in his two legs. We discussed the word Shimshon coming from the word Shemesh, which we all know means fortification. So Shimshon was the fortification of the Jewish people. We learned about the angel that shows up to Shimshon's mother and tells her that when Shimshon grows his hair, he will have power, that the strength will lie in the hair. We discussed the machloket about whether Shimshon's father, Manoach, was one of the learned people, part of the tradition of the Jewish people, or he was an Am Haaretz. We discussed Maimonides and the Machzor Vitri that say that he was learned. We discussed Shimshon's mother, Hatzlalfunis, the Talmud and tractate Baba Basra, the story of Rav Kook Zatzal, the girl that was born in Parshas Naso after her siblings had all died, and they named her Hatzlalfunis, the Marsha, that why the Talmud bothers telling us that name. And now we're moving forward. So Samson has grown up. He comes to his parents and says, I want that Philistine girl. His parents don't understand that this is part of God's plan so that Samson will have dealings with the Philistines and he will be able to attack them as a one-man show. Samson is like the snake. He is compared in Yaakov's blessing in last week's parsha, Vayechi. He is compared to the snake. Snakes don't go in packs. Snakes attack alone. Shimshon is going to do his own guerrilla warfare. We saw how Samson went with his parents down to Timnat to see the girl. And on the way, Samson goes around the vineyard as he is a Nazir. He is prohibited from eating grapes. From here, the Talmud learned the concept. Lech lech amrei nezira sechol sechol lekama lo tikrav. We tell the Nazir, go around the vineyard. Don't go through the vineyard. You shouldn't be tempted to end up plucking a grape and popping it in your mouth. And so Samson goes around the vineyard. He's attacked by a lion. He kills the lion. And then Samson asks about the girl. And they make the shidduch. He marries the girl. And they give Samson 30 friends. And Samson says to them, I'll give you a riddle. Now, the second time he went down to actually marry the girl, that was the time he revisits the carcass of the lion. And he sees that the bees have made a hive in the lion. So they give him 30 buddies. And during the party, Samson says, I'll challenge you. That I'll give you a riddle. And if you figure out the riddle, then I'll have to give you 30 garments and 30 covers. And if you can't figure out the riddle, you'll give me that. So they say, fine. And he tells them the riddle is from the consumer came out consumable material, and from the powerful one came out sweets. So from the consumer came out something that can be consumed. So the word ochel, food, to consume, to eat, means two things in Tanakh, right? We know that to consume, to eat, and a fire is called that it consumes. So that's one type of consumption. We are in what's called the 14th chapter, the 14th pasuk. Me ha'ochel, from he who eats, yatsa ma'achal, came out something to be eaten. So the word ochel and ma'achal, we are accustomed that it means food. What else is referred to as eating? So intimacy is referred to as eating. It says that the Jewish people said, we remember the fish we ate in Egypt for free, which was a euphemism for saying, we remember where in Egypt we could have women for free. Now we have all these mitzvos, you can't just marry any woman. So it says, we used to be able to eat for free. The term eating is a euphemism for intimacy. It says that when a woman cheats on her husband, so then, achala, she eats, umachata fia, then she wipes off her mouth, v'amera lo fa'alti aven, and she says, I didn't do anything wrong. So that's a euphemism for saying she cheats on her husband, then cleans herself up, comes home and says, I didn't do anything. So that's, from there we see the term eating is also a term for intimacy. The Philistines were the consumers of Israel. They were destroying us. They were the ochel. They were the Az, the powerful ones. And from them came out a wife for Samson. From them came out the sweet wife that Samson just married. The most obvious answer the Philistines should have said is, you're talking about the girl. We, the Philistines, are those that are consuming you. And here, something sweet came out of us. But they can't figure out what he's talking about. But it's a wedding. They should have figured it out. It was obvious. But Samson isn't saying that. Samson's saying the lion from the lion came out sweet. And the sweet honey that came out of the lion. So they can't figure it out. They tell Samson's wife. They say, seduce him to tell us. Otherwise, we're going to burn you and your father's house. Poor girl. What pressure. So she begs him to tell her, and she says, you hate me, you don't love me, you told my nation a riddle, you didn't tell me. And for 7 days, she's driving him crazy. So finally he tells her. Last year, we learned Ramchal's play. Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzatzo wrote a play about Samson and Samson's life. We saw many insights in the play, and one of the messages, there's a monologue at the end of the play where Samson speaks about how was I taken down like this? I'm so powerful, yet the woman could take me down. There's an eternal message in this idea that women can take down even the most powerful of men. We don't understand the strength they have. I'll get in a second, Ariel. The Medrash says that when Esav's wives were painful to Yitzchak and Rebekah, so Rebekah could handle it. But Yitzchak couldn't handle it. He went blind. The Medrash says man is made of earth. He's compared to an earthenware vessel made of earth. A woman is made from man's rib. She's compared to a vessel made of bones. When you bash together a vessel made of bone versus a vessel made of earthenware, the earthenware cracks the smithereens. So too, when a woman comes up with a man, she'll break him up the smithereens. It means in the spirit. Obviously, physically, he's stronger most of the time, but she can still take him down. Rebecca could stand up to her daughters-in-law, and they can't destroy her. She's made of the same material as they. A woman can stand up to a woman, but a man, he should realize that there are weaknesses in the man that a woman can really take him down, as we see in Samson, the most powerful of men, and time and again, women are going to take him down. So the first is his wife, who gets the riddle and tells it to the people, and on the seventh day, before sunset, they tell him, what is sweeter than honey, and what is more powerful than a lion? And he says that, you know, you guys are liars. If you really thought about it, you would have come back and told me what is sweeter than your wife and who are more powerful than the Philistines. That's what you should have said. But you didn't say that. Yes, Ariel.
She says when she's beseeching the answer, you told my nation, but you didn't tell me. If she converted to Judaism, why is she still referring to the Philistines as her nation?
So Rambam writes that we have to know an important concept in Tanakh. Samson's wives converted. Mahlon and Chilion's wives converted. Yet, Chazal also tell us that we see numerous concepts. We see that Samson's parents tell him, just like you see the vineyards here in Philistines, they crossbreed, they do kilayim, so too you can't trust who's the father, who's the mother. Things here are impure. That certainly sounds like there wasn't a conversion. But even if we say there was a conversion, the way Rambam writes, it says that for generations a person feels an affinity for the people he converted from. It says that's natural. On the contrary, we're supposed to be respectful of that. We used to have guys here who followed soccer. They followed the soccer games. We used to have guys in the Machon who followed soccer. And one of the guys was a convert from Greece. And when everyone was rooting the Israeli team, who was against the Greece team, he was rooting for the Greece team. And they all looked at him like, but that's natural. He's entitled. It says it's natural for a person, even after they convert, they feel an affinity for the people they come from. It says, on the contrary, that we have to be sensitive to that. We shouldn't speak badly. It says, Moshe was telling Jethro, he was telling Yisro, you know what God did to those Egyptians? And it says when Yitro heard that, as pious as he was, and as much as he wanted what was good for Israel, he had goosebumps. He felt very, very bad. The Egyptians had been bad to him too, but they were still his people. So when Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, heard that, even though he came to convert to Judaism, it was very hard for him to hear about how much the Egyptians had suffered. And Chazal say, on the contrary, we have to be sensitive to that. So the fact that she says, my nation, that's not so terrible. So Shimshon goes down to Ashkelon. Gentlemen, where's Ashkelon on the map? I didn't bring a map today and I don't bring a marker, right? Okay, let's quickly draw a map. Okay. Gentlemen, who knows where Ashkelon is? Help me out.
It's across the
next to the sea.
Help me out here. What have we here? Thank you. What have we here? What have we here?
Jordan.
What have we here? Jerusalem. Okay? And about here, this is the Mediterranean, so about here is Ashkelon. Maybe you drop more north, that's Ashkelon, which is, throughout our history, it was a Philistine city for much of the time, Ashkelon. Now, Sarah and Eshtaol, the region where Shimshon is coming from, the region of Dan, is right here. Dan. Sarah and Eshtaol are here. It's not far from there. He goes down to Ashkelon. He kills 30 Philistines, takes their clothing and gives them to the people who said the riddle, and he goes back to his father's house all upset. So what does his father-in-law do? He takes Shimshon's wife and gives her to one of his buddies. Now, by non-Jewish law, marriage and divorce are not as defined as Jewish law. By Jewish law, you marry with a wedding contract, you divorce with a divorce contract. By non-Jewish law, you marry because you decide we're in it together. You divorce because you decide we're done. So Shimshon's father-in-law legitimately thinks it's over. Shimshon left her. What he did was not so terrible. I'm saying we read it and it sounds terrible, but Shimshon took a long time. It was the next harvest when Shimshon shows up, and it could have been a whole year till Shimshon shows up. And he comes with the goats, and he brings her a gift, and he tells her father, I want to go see my wife. And her father says, you can't come. So her father says, I thought you hated her, so I gave her to your friend. Again, what he's saying is not so terrible. And Shimshon gets, he says, but you know, she has a younger sister who's better looking than her. Why don't you marry her? So Shimshon says, that's it. This time I've had it. So he goes and conquers 30 foxen, and he ties their tails together, and he puts in between the tails a torch. Now, what's unique about foxen is that even when they're scared of something and they're running, they don't run in a straight line. They always run in a zigzag, and they go forward and then backward. A fox is unique in that a fox will also retreat. Part of the fox's strategy is that because it's small, it can turn quickly, and when you try to chase it, so the fox can escape more easily because it can turn more quickly. Now this was a message to the Philistines. You guys have turned on your promise. We had a deal that we don't harm you, you don't harm us. And look at how much you're harming us. So 300 foxen, and they destroy the Philistine crops. They destroy the Philistines. It's the time of harvest. So everything is dry here in Israel. And all their piles of wheat and all the hay and all the standing crops and all the olive groves, everything's dry, and so there's total destruction. And when the Philistines hear this, they didn't have fire trucks in those days. It was very hard to put out the fires. And when this destruction happened, so they asked who did it, And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the man from Timnat, because he took his wife and gave him to his buddy. So the Philistines came and they actually burnt her and her father in the house. How did they know it was him? I guess someone saw. So Shimshon says, yeah, you guys now you deserve another punishment. Killed my wife, killed my father-in-law. So he goes and he attacks a group of Philistines. He does another terrorist attack. And Samson's whole logic here is to ensure that the Jewish people are not held accountable for what he does. He's a one-man show. And that was his logic in marrying into the Philistines, so that he would have a personal vendetta. And he goes to a place called Seif Sela Eitam. And the Philistines come with their soldiers. It's in Judean territory. And the tribe of Judah asks them, what'd you guys come from? And they say, we're not coming to attack you. We just want to take Samson. Look at what he did to us. So the tribe of Yehuda sends 3,000 men. They're going against their own leader. Samson was the shofet. He was the chief rabbi. So they're sending 3,000 soldiers to pick up the chief rabbi and give him over to the enemies to be killed. They come to Shimshon and they tell Shimshon, don't you know the politics? They're in control now. What'd you do to us? Now they're ready to attack us. So what does Shimshon says? I just paid them back the way they behaved to me. So they don't enter the argument with him. They say, we came to bind you and give you into the Philistines' hand. And Shimshon says, just promise me you won't harm me. So fine. They say, no, we won't harm you. We're just going to tie you up and give you into their hands. So they tie him with two fresh ropes and they bring him up. So as he's there, the Philistines see him at a distance and they let out a joyous hurrah. That's it, he's in their hands. So they advance towards him, and the tribe of Judea retracts. They go back, and he's standing there all tied up. So the Philistines, when they see him, what they don't realize is that he has such strength that the ropes come off his hands as though they were just, they had all been charred, like they melt off his hands. He has no weapons. They're all armed and dangerous. So he grabs a jawbone of a carcass of a donkey, and with that jawbone, he kills 1,000 men. So he has two piles of corpses, and the Philistines, the rest of them, run. So he looks at the piles, and he says, Chamor is a donkey. Chamor is also a pile. He says, with this Chamor, I made Chamorotayim. I made two piles. Chamor, Chamorotayim. I made two piles. And he says, wow, with one jawbone I was able to kill 1,000 men. So he tosses the jawbone and he names the place the Ramat Lehi. And then he's very thirsty and he sees nothing to drink. So he calls out to Hashem and he says, he gave me this great salvation, now I'll die of thirst and then these uncircumcised one will take me. So Hashem makes a stream come out of the tooth of the jawbone of the donkey, and he drinks the water, and he is rejuvenated. He names the place Eina Kore, the stream of he who called out to Hashem, that's in the Lehi. Then he goes to Aza. Aza, again, we know is on the western side in Philistine territory, what they call today the West Bank, right? And when the Philistines hear that Samson's come to Aza, he comes there, and it says he was with a woman of ill repute. So that's a questionable, we read that and we have to wonder, what's going on here? So again, Samson has this inspiration that he has to go into Philistine territory. They shouldn't see him as one of the Jews so that he could continue his attacks. The Talmud nonetheless says that, that there are two things at play here. On the one hand is Samson's purity. His intentions are the right intentions, he's going in the right way. On the other hand, it was tainted. The Talmud says that this was tainted. There was an element where Samson went after his desires. So it seems that even in the fulfillment of God's wishes, we have room to have our desires misguide us. And it says that Samson was attracted. It wasn't just the desire to do the will of Hashem. There was an element of his own desires involved here too. A person, even when they're doing a mitzvah, so it's not all or nothing. You could do something and it could be 100% in the name of Hashem, could be 90% in the name of Hashem, could be 80% or 20%. We know that in our own performance of mitzvahs. How perfect is our intention? How much are we doing it for the credit? How much are we doing it because it feels good? How much are we doing it because God said so? So that fluctuates. And the Talmud, the Mishnah, and Tractate Sota says that when Samson did these actions, on the one hand, there was a tremendous percentage of doing it as the will of Hashem. He knew this was part of his mission. On the other hand, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't 100% in the name of Hashem. What percentage, the Talmud doesn't tell us. The Talmud just says it was tainted. And that's why ultimately his eyes were gorged out. That was a punishment for the fact that he did go after his desires, what his eyes saw and what he desired. So he goes with the woman of ill repute in Aza, and the Philistines are ready, and they lock the gates of Aza, and all night long they're preparing. In the morning, we'll kill him. Shimshon gets up in the middle of the night, and he takes the two doors off their bolts. He carries them on his back, and he places them on a mountaintop that faces Hebron. And after that, he starts liking a woman in the Sorek Valley called Dililah. So we have different opinions among our sages. The common opinion is that she was a Philistine woman. But there is an opinion that says she was a Jewish woman. This Dililah, who he was so attracted to. The Talmud says the name Dililah reflects what she did to him. The term Dililah comes from the word Lidalel. In modern Hebrew, Lidalel means to dilute. But in ancient Hebrew, Lidalel means to weaken. It says, Dildilah et kocho, Dildilah et ma'asav. She was able to weaken him.
Is that the basis?
What?
Is that the basis for saying because of this link to the verb that she was Jewish, or there's another basis for it?
No. The reason for thinking she was Jewish is that the Philistines offer her 1,100 silver coins from each of the leaders of the Philistines. And in the next section, right after the story of Samson and Delilah, we read a story about a Jewish woman who had 1,100 silver coins, which she dedicated in honor of Hashem. So the question is, why are these two stories juxtaposed? So the more accepted opinion is that the two stories are to contrast two people who went for the money with the wrong intentions. Because in the next story, she ultimately gives it for idol worship, the 1,100 coins. But there are those who say that the woman in the next story, the mother of Micha, who stole the money from his mother, that woman was actually Delilah. And that would make Delilah a Jewish woman. Who is that opinion? I think it's the Ralbag. And I think it's also quoted by the Radak. But if you want to know, give me a second, I'll check. A second, if that's important to you, Odrega, I'll check.
But it doesn't sound like you said 15.
Wait, one second. The Rabbah quotes the Radak. I don't see it in the Radak. I see the other opinion in the Radak. The Rabbah says, "Ukvar amru k'tzat amfarshim." Some of the commentaries already said, "Shaya ze b'shil haskama mispar elef u'ma kesef." No, the Rabbah doesn't say it either. So I don't remember who says it. I don't remember. I don't see it in the Rabbah and I don't see it in the Radak. But if it's important, remind me. I'll look. I don't remember. I don't see it in either one. They both say it's juxtaposed because the 1,100 coins brought destruction. That's what the Radak and the Ralbag say. But that it's the same woman, I don't remember.
It just makes the show
more interesting. I didn't hear it.
Now we have to find out this.
Remind me. I have to look. I don't remember. I don't remember.
So,
back to our story. So the Philistines come and tell Delilah, you seduce him, you tell us how he has so much strength, and we want to bind him and torture him, and we'll give you each 1,100 coins. So Delilah tells Samson, tell me please, how are you so strong? How could you be bound and tortured? Isn't that obvious? He tells him what she wants. But you guys will be surprised. This is a recurring theme. Aesop's fables throughout many cultures have this story again and again, that the woman can get the guy to say, to reveal, to do that which he knows will be destructive to himself. And if you think about it, it's a recurring theme in all of life, saying we see it over and over again. Women can get a guy to drink and then they could tell him, you could drive, it's not so terrible, come on, be a man. For sure, but I don't know it.
Oh.
I don't know the deeper meaning behind the mitzvah of Nazir. Why is there such a mitzvah to grow one's hair? I don't know the deeper meaning behind why Samson would grow his hair. And I don't know why he had more strength because he had more hair. I don't know. We can understand that there's an element of separating from desire. We can understand that it was a period of time where the Jews might have been influenced by the Philistines who were frivolous and couldn't even unite to appoint one leader. They had to have five leaders. And as we see later on, they're joking. They are repeatedly referred to as the uncircumcised ones, which is a reference to having greater desire to be more promiscuous, to be more focused, to being more hedonistic. And therefore, it could be that part of the message of Shimshon was the opposite, where Shimshon would not drink wine. Shimshon was not concerned with his external appearances. You know, his hair grew from the day he was a baby. He never combed his hair. You know, what did he have? He had it wrapping around his head. He must have been a scary guy. Think about it. His beard was never trimmed. His hair was never trimmed. Must have been a scary sight. Broad as four rooms. I don't know. It's scary.
Was he hung by his hair? Is this Shimshon or Mami?
No.
Who was hung by his hair?
Avshalom. We'll get there. Dov. So Shimshon tells her, if I'll be bound with seven fresh ropes, I'll be ill. I'll become like everyone else. So they bring her seven fresh ropes. She binds them. She has an ambush waiting in the other room. She tells him the Philistines are upon you. He quickly tears it off. And you can't even tell that he's strained himself to do it. And she says, come on, you joked me, you told me lies. Please, tell me, how can you be bound? He tells her, if they'll bind me with new ropes that were never used for any work, then I'll be like a regular human. So, again, she does that, and this time she doesn't even call the Philistines. She's prepared. This might not be the truth. So, she tells him, the Philistines are upon you, Shimshon. Again, comes off like a string. And she says, you keep joking, you keep lying to me. Tell me, please, how you could be bound. He says, okay, if you take the seven locks of hair in my head and you put them in the loom, she does that. She puts them in a loom. She sticks the loom in the ground with a spoke of a tent. And she says, the Philistine are upon you. He gets up from his sleep and he carries off the loom. Where are they? She says, how could you say you love me? Your heart isn't with me. Three times now you joked me. You didn't tell me. How are you so strong? So every time they're intimate, in the final seconds of intimacy, she slips out from under him and she drives him crazy. So finally he gives in and he tells her everything. He tells her, I've never had any knife laid on my head. I've been dedicated to God from my mother's womb. And if I have the haircut, then I'll lose all my strength. I'll become ill. I'll become like a regular person. So when he says, I was dedicated to God, she knows he's a tzaddik. She knows he would never say God's name to joke with her. So she knows the truth now. She calls the Philistines. She says, this time I know everything. Bring me the money. So they bring her the money. And then she puts him to sleep on her lap. And she calls in a man and they cut off his 7 locks of hair. And they start torturing him. And he, even in his sleep, she's toying around with him and she sees he's not as strong as he used to be. So she says, the Philistines are here. And he doesn't realize yet that anything has changed. He figures, I'll deal with them like before, but he doesn't realize that Hashem's not with him anymore. So they grab him, and this time he's caught. And by the time he realizes he doesn't have his strength, it's too late. And we'll pick up here.
There's Hashem. So one of the places where we learn on the